When faced with the inexplicable, do you really think that you could tell the difference between, say, magic and advanced technology? Do you really believe that you could throw off everything that you have learned and everything that you have seen to try and understand something that is beyond your comprehension? Or would you cling to what you know because you couldn't imagine believing in anything else? Hello. My name is not Todd McFarlane, and I am not the creator of Spawn. But, like him and many of you, I find myself drawn to the darker alleys of fiction, where, among desperate stakes and uneasy alliances, we can tell stories that reveal to us but some of the many horrid faces of humanity, and everything that gives us reason to take a stand within and against the darkness. What you're about to listen to is a fan-made audiobook that is set within the Warhammer 40K universe. Now, if any of those words sound alarming or unappetizing to you, and curiosity does not beckon, the door, such as it is over there. Well, my name is Kevin Walker Burnett, and you're listening to She Dreams of Death, Prologue. The Incident at Capaticus. This is a work of fan fiction and has no connection to Games Workshop or any of their publishing partners. And you should not need any prior experience with the Warhammer 40K universe or any of its publishing partners to join us on this journey. But before we get going, a brief content warning. This series will contain elements of cosmic and body horror, references to and descriptions of self-harm and suicide, and features a fascistic theocracy of xenophobic humans that should not serve as a template for society or a substitute for an equitable and functioning democratic republic. But here we are. And now, She Dreams of Death. Prologue. The Incident at Capaticus. The Emperor of Mankind has sat on the Golden Throne for 10,000 years after being mortally wounded in what was almost the final battle for humankind. While he sits, rotting, suspended between life and death, he serves as the beacon at the center of the Imperium, an empire that stretches most of the galaxy and has uncountable trillions of humans living wretched lives under the weight of its hulking bureaucracy. All, almost all, looking up to him as a savior, as their god. Desperation and hope hold hands as they approach the end of existence. Humanity is beset on all sides by all manner of horrors they cannot comprehend and are, by all means, doomed to lose a war of attrition that could last another 10,000 years. But it is not humanity's way to shrink quietly into the void without a fight. Of the many battalions and legions that protect the people and interests of the Imperium, and the endless mass of souls living within it, are an order of armored clergy, each pledged by faith to the God Emperor and his service. They are the Adeptus Sororitas, the Emperor's chosen daughters, the Sisters of Battle. And to the people of the Imperium, they are armored angels of war, holding back the darkness with nothing but each other, their faith, and the many anointed weapons of their order. A single sister, in her power armor, wielding a bolter, is a force unto herself. Together, the Battle Sisters have stood against armies and defied gods. They have even worked miracles. But will it be enough? Of the many sisters in the wide ranks of the Adeptus Sororitas, there is Sister Superior Lavinia, 9th Cloister in the Order's Hospitaller, Reserve Battalion. Like many of her fellow sisters, Lavinia has but one purpose: to give her life in the service of the God Emperor, the Champion of Humanity, the Lord of all. There is no greater calling, and there are no alternatives. There is only war, and anything less would be surrender. Every day was spent in his service, but every night, Lavinia dreamed of death. Every night, she saw the moment a new soul would be added to the endless list of the fallen. Every night, she saw herself, or her sisters, or complete strangers face the inevitable and be consumed by it. She waited for the day that she would finally join them, so the sisters that survived her could add Lavinia's name to the litany and enshrine her forever within the Emperor's soul. It was a divine purpose, one that had guided her life, as she thought it would guide her soul in death. But this sister was not fated to die. Our story starts not with her, but on another planet, not far away. It was the middle of the first shift on an insignificant imperial world named Copaticus, and the wide streets of its only crowded settlement were clotted with laborers. There were whispers in the crowd. Something was wrong. Copaticus was not a shining jewel of the Imperium. It did not have the grand cathedrals of Ophelia VII, or the brutalist defenses of Macragge, or the mighty forges of Mars. Copaticus was little more than a massive fuel refinery with a deeply rooted infestation of sick, mutated, and wretched humanity keeping the fuel flowing. It was a small and poisoned wasteland of a planet, only of importance to the Imperium because of its convenient location between more developed worlds. Otherwise, it warranted no more effort or attention than a governor, a small complement of Imperial advisors, and a meager chapter of the Imperial Inquisition. On most days, there would be steam rising from open tanks of waste fuel, massive catalytic engines pumping out heat and off-gassing isocyanates and phosgenes, giving the thin atmosphere of this planet a permanent, sickly tint. Every shift, on any other day, would process 1,000 fuel barges sent to every corner of the sector. But the work had stopped, and no one seemed to care. Not since the incident. It had happened during the last shift change, when the rank-and-file laborers would trade copper wire and ration cards for roasted vermin that tasted of waste fuel or mushroom wine on their way to sleep or to work, playing at freedom between their servitude. There wasn't much warning. Little more than murmurs of confusion, which began to spread throughout the crowded street. The moment after that, there was a single scream, and then, in a matter of seconds, there was a stampede. Soon, 184 people were dead, 180 of them there in the street, and 4 of them inside that meager chapter house of the Imperial Inquisition, just a few hundred yards away. This garrison inquisitorius was staffed with a tube-fed records clerk, a complement of clerical servitors, the chapter guard, an astropath, a master torturer by the name of Samusan, and was under the care and careful eye of Inquisitor Quietus. Visiting the Inquisition on this day was an agent of the Imperium whose name or affiliation was never recorded, and a captured prisoner awaiting transport to the Imperial Seat of Power and the home of humanity, Holy Terra. They had been going about their daily duties when their garrison erupted in screams. The clerical staff had been showered in bits of brain and gore from what little was left of the astropath's head. It had exploded, violently and without warning. With that alone, they had been cut off from the rest of the galaxy, cut off from their only connection back to the Emperor. So, in that moment of crisis, they rushed to find Inquisitor Quietus, who was down in the holding cells with the unknown agent and the prisoner. Quietus was dead by the time they found him. A flying shard of skull had shot into his cheekbone and out of the back of his head. It was embedded in the wall, behind where he stood, painted by an outline of blood. Beside the Inquisitor's body were two corpses, both headless, one behind bars and the other free. The room painted the picture for them. Inquisitor Quietus had been killed by their cranial shrapnel, leaving the rest of the garrison headless. Outside of the chapter house, the object of concern was the aberration in the street, surrounded by a circle of trampled corpses. It was blocking the main artery into the industrial district, and no one dared to go near it. This baleful tumor of pulsing chrome and wet membrane was screaming and wheezing, a mess of overlapping tubes and plates. Unknown liquids pumping through it as it grew, slowly reaching towards the many onlookers gathered at a distance, watching with fear. Eventually, the street was cleared with efficient brutality. The Imperial Inquisition had claimed its jurisdiction. It was their role, after all, to protect the people of the Imperium from powers beyond their comprehension, and from themselves. Those that did not have a chance to escape were corralled into the care of Torture Master, second rank, Samusan, who had arrived at work to find the aberration in the street, his boss dead, and the entire chapter house in disarray. Samusan kept his uniform crisp and usually free of bloodstains, though today was the exception. If ever there was a conniving, unpleasant, paranoid, and short-tempered member of the Imperial Inquisition, it was Samusan. By the time the shift had ended, he had personally conducted 45 interrogations and had only killed 13 of his subjects. Samusan had felt this to be a bad omen, so before he let the witnesses go, he chose one at random and executed them on the spot. They were out for blood. They got it, to be sure, but not much else. The only lead that he had recovered was that a pitiful vagrant by the name of Rat Milk was the one seen screaming before the stampede. He had been, reportedly, clutching his head, and when he ran out of breath and breathed in, he stopped and he reached out, and he said a few short words that could have either have been, "Help me," "Please," or "I believe," something none of the gathered witnesses agreed on. In that instant, what Rat Milk actually saw was a tall woman with white beads braided into her hair, wearing a white linen vestment that Rat Milk had never seen before. In that moment, he thought he saw an angel, with her forearm turning to metal and ending in a double-barreled gun. They locked eyes. What Rat Milk actually said was never heard by anyone. Not even by Sister Lavinia, who had been cleaning her power armor in a room on a planet not far away. If she could have read his lips, she would have known the last words of Rat Milk. "Kill me." What happened next was something that each of the 45 witnesses agreed on. Rat Milk screamed again, and this time did not run out of breath. Shortly after, there was an explosion of metal and flesh that immediately consumed the nearby onlookers, and the scream had only become louder. Samusan could hear it. Every moment he was pulling the truth from his subjects, echoing down the hall outside of the interrogation chamber like a distant duet. Rat Milk was not a given name, and no one was sure if he ever even had one. He had been so named because of his business trading food, narcotics, or ration cards for small jars of white goop, which he claimed was a cure-all and psychotropic, one that made you healthy, virile, and strong, while smothering you in a blissful opiatic fugue. No one knew what the mixture was made of, and even though it had sent a small handful of people to the necropits for recycling, it had the occasional benefit of actually working as advertised. Even those who didn't know Rat Milk by name or by trade knew him by sight or smell, and there wasn't a soul in the area who hadn't been accosted with his presence. What most aggravated Samusam during his investigation was that every person they interrogated knew of Rat Milk, but none knew anything outside of his presence, those jars of white goop, and his occasional psychotic ranting. Samusam was certain that Rat Milk, wherever the horrid thing was, knew what happened. But Rat Milk had disappeared, not even present among the trampled corpses. By this time, the gang boss of the fuel refinery was nearly foaming at the mouth, demanding that the road be freed of the pulsing, screaming obstruction so he could keep the fuel flowing. He even offered Samusam an empty storage tank and a tractor tug, just to get the thing out of the way. Samusam had tried to pull the truth out of this incident with pliers and needles, but all he could do was send a request for Imperial aid to nearby planets over slow wave, which was only slightly better than delivering it by hand. All the while, that pulsing monstrosity screamed endlessly, and the masses waited and watched. They had to cut it out of the street to move it, severing metal tubes that had snaked down and latched into the filcrete with webbed capillaries, as though it was trying to pull itself back into the ground. After a few hours, they managed to pull the obstruction free, now 2 stories tall and about as wide. Samusam left the gang boss to deal with the crater and walked alongside the tractor tug, the only thing large enough to haul the pulsing mass to the empty tank that would become its home. Coiled metal roots dangling from chunks of filcrete swayed out of sync with the tractor tug, still trying to latch onto something. Samusam knocked them away with his hand as he walked. While Samusam paced alongside, he examined its cargo, feeling a rising bile in his stomach, something in between fear and disgust. The horror was undoubtedly something evil, that much was plain. It was something born from corruption and chaos itself, not to live, but to die slowly, experiencing every moment. A poetry that Samusam could not help but admire. Where Samusam's subjects would pass out or perish, this thing felt pain beyond comprehension, pain beyond death. He could hear it in the scream. It was a sound that Samusam could not help but think was human. If he stepped back, he could even see the coil of intestine or brain in the thing's skin and see the strain of muscle and tendon struggling to hold the pulsing mass together, barely containing its own growth. He saw everything that he hated in that disgusting heap. This, he thought, was the very reason the Inquisition existed. It must, he reasoned, be something birthed from the many evils that had beset the human race ever since they first feared the shadows. It was, he concluded, his duty to see this through, though the thought made him want to run and hide. As the screaming mass was lifted by crane into the empty fuel tank, Samusam was grinding his teeth together, clenching down hard on a molar that needed to be pulled, and feeling a hot spike shoot down his jaw. Pain, at times, offered clarity. By the time it was sealed inside, Samusam couldn't think of anything else to do other than close the hatch behind him and sit in the tank with the nightmare. He couldn't bring himself to leave it. It was a chilling curiosity. It never paused for breath or went hoarse, as if there was something recognizable left inside of it. Something that still felt fear, confusion, and pain. Something that wouldn't die. It was a symphony in no discernible key, and it had consumed him. It fueled his fear. How could something like this have been allowed to happen? Here? And what could he do? He was a faithful servant, a skilled interrogator, but this? This was something he was never prepared for. So, he paced around the aberration, unable to control his thoughts, and started to see a pattern to its growth. There was a twisted loop of skin and tensioned wire on one end that, when Samusam tilted his head, looked like an arm that had grown wrong and twisted back into its own pulsing mass. The coils of tubing that looked like intestine were next to large lobed masses of pulsing membranes that could have been a liver, for Samusan had held many in his hands. Across the surface, Samusan could see tubes that webbed like veins, splitting themselves into a fluid fractal. A creeping realization began to gnaw at him. Rat Milk was no witness, and he did not escape. This was Rat Milk. Samusan could see it clearly now that he had walked its circumference. He could almost recognize what it was, and he could finally understand why it was screaming. He stared at his reflection in a piece of wet chrome, once maybe some organ of the doomed vagrant, but now something else entirely, something wrong. The torture master knew pain as well as anyone would in his world, and the only thing he heard in that pitiable wailing scream was pain and fear that would never stop. He saw himself in chrome, reflected back, and saw his fear, recognized his own hopelessness as he saw it in the faces of those he tortured. The ones that knew their fate. The ones that had surrendered. Samusan was eventually found slumped against the inside wall of the storage tank, hours later. He had shot himself in the head, twice. All he said when he was found was, "I don't think I can die." You have been listening to She Dreams of Death, Prologue, The Incident at Copaticus, which was written, engineered, and performed by yours truly, Kevin Walker Burnett. This is a work of fan fiction and has no connection to Games Workshop or any Warhammer 40K publishing partners. For those of you who do not already know me, I run a media production business out of Los Angeles, California. You might also want to check out my other project, All Machines, about a mechanic finding their way in a post-apocalyptic Los Angeles where every machine and gadget has come alive. Chapter 1 of She Dreams of Death is on the way, and if you want it to arrive even sooner, then you can either let me know in the comments, or you can scream into the endless void, which turns out to be a surprisingly good listener, just like you. Until next time, thank you.